If you like the Live Wild podcast and enjoy hunting-related apparel, I've got you covered. I just launched some great t-shirts, hats, and sweatshirts under my own Live Wild brand. You can find them now on my website, remywarren.com. I just want to say thanks again, everyone, for all the support, and I really hope you enjoy these designs as much as I do. Who knows? Maybe you'll head over to my website and find your next lucky hat. I'm Remy Warren, and I've lived my life in the wild. As a professional guide and hunter, I've spent thousands of days perfecting my craft. I want to give that knowledge to you. In this podcast, we relive some of my past adventures as I give you practical hunting tips to make you more successful. Whether you're just getting started or a lifelong hunter, this podcast will bring you along on the hunt and teach you how to live wild. This podcast is presented by Mountain Tough and Yeti. I partnered with Mountain Tough because a lot of the tactics and hunt styles I talk about in this podcast require you to be in the best physical shape you can. Their app is designed for hunters to get you ready for the backcountry or any hunt you have planned this fall. Yeti's been a longtime supporter of mine, and they make some of the toughest products out there that are built to last and they're built for the wild. Welcome back to the Live Wild podcast, everyone. Okay, so here's what I like about you listening right now. You made it to episode 2, and you're about to level up. Last week, we talked about going unseen, ducking the eye. This week is all about knowing the nose. Now, most of the hunting information out there about the sense of smell relates to the animal's sense of smell. But this week, we're going to be talking about the hunter's sense of smell. In all honesty, my nose has killed probably just about as many elk as spotting and glassing. And that might sound crazy, but if you spent any amount of time in the elk hunting woods or been out elk hunting, you've smelled elk. With the right tactics and practice, you can use your sense of smell to identify those unseen clues and make the right play. So long as you haven't lost that sense in maybe say the last couple years after getting sick. I think I said that cryptic enough to not get flagged. But before we nose into the tactics, I really want to share one of my all-time favorite hunting stories with you. It's a fairly crazy string of events that actually happened. We're going to call it the story of the foreshadowed bull. Through my time guiding, there's like a few times that I just kind of think, I don't even know if I could tell the story because I almost think that sometimes I don't believe it myself. On this particular trip, I just got my own outfitting business. And what happened was when I started off guiding when I was 18 years old. And I got into the story that got me to where I am today is a very long story. And I assume over the course of this podcast, you'll start to kind of get an idea of where I started and now where I am. But one in particular, when I transitioned from being a guide to owning my own outfitting business in Montana, I ended up having to buy kind of the business from a guy that actually bought it from my grandpa in 1980. And I was looking to kind of take over the outfitter that I was working for. And this other guy in the area wanted out, knew that I wanted it in it. So he came to me and said, hey, I'll sell you the permits that I, like the business that I bought essentially, or the permits for what I bought it in 1980. And I was in college at the time. I was working as a guide in the spring and summer semester. Like I took spring and summer semesters in college and then took the whole fall from August to, you know, after like January off and just worked that whole time and saved up everything that I had because I knew that I wanted to start my own business. And so I bought my outfitting business and started it, but there was a couple guys that were booked from the guy that I'd purchased the permits from. And so part of the deal was I had to fulfill like any obligations that he had. So I had a couple hunts that I had to just guide pro bono essentially in order to kind of take over these permits, which I got a screaming deal on. And so these guys show up and it was an archery elk hunt. And it was like, I set up a wall tent. So we had like the way that the camp was set up. Like I had this wall tent set up. We did the meals in the wall tent and I had this little cabin. And so for this first whole season, I actually spent the whole season in just like I'd spent my everything I had on getting everything set up. And so I had my cabin, which I normally stayed in through the guiding season, which I had a fireplace and everything. And then I had a wall tent. And that's what I used as like for the food in the cook shack. And then I just had like this pup tent of like a Walmart Coleman tent that was my tent. And then I threw like my sleeping bag in there and I spent the entire rest of the year in that just like crappy Walmart tent. So the clients had the cabin and then we had the wall tent for the food and lodging. And then I slept in a tent out in front of that. And so the guys show up and they're bow hunting. And so we go out the first day, and the one guy was talking to me and he says, "Dude, how can anyone miss an elk? Like, an elk is such a big animal." And I've heard this before, and I just shook my head. I was like, "You just said the words that pretty much cursed you. Like, don't say that." And you just couldn't figure it out. So we go out hunting. I think it's like by the third day, I'm calling a bull. And I've had this happen to multiple guys that have said the same thing. I'm like, "Oh, here it goes." Bull runs in 19 yards, guy shoots and misses. And it was just like, "Oh, dude." And I don't even think that, like, I don't even know what he was thinking, right? So he misses this elk. So later on, we're driving in the truck, and this grouse pops out, like a mountain grouse. And I was like, "Oh, cool. Shoot the grouse. Make sure your bow's on, right?" So he shoots at the grouse and misses the grouse. And I was like, "Oh, dude, all right." I was like, well, he's like, "Yeah, well, at least it wasn't an elk." And I'm like, "Yeah, okay, cool." So we shoot at a target, and his bow's not off. He just got excited. And I can see, like, this guy's just a very excitable dude. He gets pretty pumped up when something's out there. So I was like, "All right, whatever." Well, it's the middle of the day, and I was like, let's go look for another grouse. So we go, and I find this grouse in this tree. It's like this really big spruce tree. And he draws back, and I'm like, he's not going to miss this. Like, we just shot, like, we had him shoot some pine cones and some all kinds of things. We did a lot of practicing. And he shoots the grouse, and he hits the grouse. And I don't know, like, if the grouse fell, but I couldn't find the grouse. It's like, so I don't know where he hit. I just saw feathers and then no grouse. So I'm like, man, okay, like, the grouse has to be in this tree. And we couldn't find it. And for some reason, that moment, like, stuck in my head in this really weird way of saying, man, I hope these actions aren't foreshadowing the rest of the week. He missed a grouse. He missed an elk. He missed a grouse. He hit a grouse. We couldn't find the grouse. And for some reason, that, like, thought of something foreshadowing, like, kept sticking in my mind. And I just didn't like it. It was very unsettling. I don't know why, but I was just thinking, like, if this were a book, this would be that moment in that book that was just foreshadowing the things to come, which wouldn't be a long stretch based on the way this dude was shooting. So we go out and we hunt really hard all week, and it's the last day. And I go to this spot. I'm like, his brother was with us actually. And his brother was so tired, 'cause we had some opportunities. We crawled in. We had this really cool encounter with a mountain lion one day. I was calling and he was set up, and his mountain lion walked in. And we just had, like, this incredible week and a lot of action, but just not another opportunity to shoot. So we go to this other spot. We're hiking in, and the wind shifts, and I smell an elk. I'm like, there's this difference. I know what the elk smell like where they've been, and then I know what the elk smell like where they are. Like, that, I was like, there's a bull here somewhere. Like, the wind, we're walking into the wind, and I can smell an elk. So I said, "Get an arrow on." And he's like looking at me like, "You don't, what? You smell an elk?" I was like, "There's, just trust me here, dude." So he puts an arrow on, and I start making some cow calls. And sure enough, the small 5-point bull starts walking in. I'm like, okay, so we get down, and we're kind of caught in the open a little bit. And this bull starts walking in, and the guy, I'm like, all right, wait for him to cross this tree. Okay, draw back. And so he starts to draw his bow back. And as he's drawing his bow back, he hits the trigger, and that arrow goes, like, I don't even know, 4 feet in front of us. Like, he just starts his draw cycle and punches the trigger, and that arrow flings off the string and goes, like, right in front of us. And that bull's still coming. And I just whisper to him real calm, just to try to keep his, like, head in the game here. I'm like, "Hey, do that same thing. Just draw it back all the time, all the way this time." And I was trying to be as calm as possible. So he knocks another arrow, draws back, and I range the bull. It's like 35 yards. Shoots and misses. The bull runs off, and I bugle, and the bull stops. I range it, and it's like 65 yards. And I was like, 65. And he shoots again and hits the bull. And I'm like, and the bull, the bull runs off. I bugle, and the bull stops at like 100 yards and then disappears into the thick timber. So I'm like, okay, we're going to give it a little bit. It looked like a good shot, but I was like, I just want to, you know, I don't know. I mean, I knew it looked like he hit it behind the shoulder, so it wasn't too far back. It wasn't really bad. It looked okay. So we give it a little bit and start to follow the tracks, and we pick up that other first little arrow that went. So I think now he's got two arrows left in his quiver at this point. So I start tracking. I go to where that bull was standing, and I find the blood trail, and it's just not, like, it doesn't look good. And there's a spot on bull elk where if they've been, so elk are grazers, right? And they fill up, their stomachs fill up with grass. They just feed on grass. Now, that bull was probably out grazing in this spot. He was by himself, and he wasn't super rutted up, so he was probably focusing on just kind of feeding, maybe got kicked out of a group. And sometimes what happens when a bull, like, feeds, like, really, really good feed on him, their stomach pushes out, and it pushes their vitals up, actually. And there's a spot that's, like, right behind the front shoulder, but low. And it's, like, below the heart, but it doesn't hit any vitals. Now, it's fatal if you hit a bull there, but they don't bleed. It doesn't happen right away. And so I'm like, the one thing that I don't like is anything that's wounded. You know, we try our best as hunters to be as proficient as possible. Like, I spend my entire summer shooting my bow, and I kind of expect the same for the people that hunt with me. And I know things happen, but I'm like, immediately in my head, I'm like, I've got this, like, gut-wrenching feeling of this was foreshadowed. This is just, like, we aren't going to find this bull. And so I start looking for blood, and we're following the blood, and I'm like, okay, maybe this is a little bit better. I've got spots here, spots there, spots here, spots there. And we follow it, and it just goes dry. Like, the blood trail goes dry, and it's midday at this point. So now I just start, like, walking back and forth, and it is like, I cannot pick up. I lose the tracks with all these other tracks. And one thing I told him, you know, I was like, being optimistic, I'm like, man, if you hit a bull, like, I'm really good at tracking stuff. So we'll find it. Like, I'm not going to quit until I find it. And so he, you know, we're looking, and it's like, we just lost the trail. Like, it just went so cold. So I decided to I'm just like walking. And just now at this point, I'm just looking to see if I can find the bull. I was like, I marked the last blood, but I just had to kind of give up on that. So I'm looking, and I can't find anything. And so I hike to this ridge. It's like probably a mile and a half. I just kind of was like going on my route, and I'm in this, it's like really thick timber, bunch of different ridges in there. I come over this ridge, I step over this log, and I'm standing there, and I'm just thinking about the irony of the foreshadowing of that grouse, missing the grouse, hitting the grouse. And I just can't get that out of my head. I was thinking, what are the odds of, like, just having that weird foreshadowing feeling and then being here and the same thing happening? And I'm sitting here in many ways just kind of contemplating all of life and the way that things just work together. And I'm standing there, and I look down at my feet in the middle, a mile away from where this bull was. I look down at my feet, and I catch a small speck of blood, like maybe two pinheads big. And I think to myself, there's absolutely no way that happened. Like, that's a needle in a thousand haystacks. So I looked at it, and I follow it, and I see a track, like a big bull track, and another speck of blood, and another speck of blood. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, this is the bull. So I mark where we're at, and I go back, and I say, hey man, I found the trail for the bull. He's like, really? Yeah. I was like, yeah, dude. Like, I just can't even explain how I found this. It's crazy, random luck. So we go back to the blood trail, and we start following it. And it leads toward this patch of alders. And, like, there's a lot of different types of trees around. And there's, like, we're in Lodgepole, and then this other hill kind of comes down, and there's this patch of alders. And as we're moving up, I see the bull, like, lift his head, and he's kind of in the final, he's dying, you know? And so I'm like, okay, there's the bull. So I was like, we got to kind of, like, stalk in, cause I don't want this bull to get up and run into those alders and disappear. And so the bull's down, and we're walking in, and it's getting really thick, but I can see, like, we can see the bull. We've got, like, an opening, and then it's thick behind him. And then I hear that noise that you don't want to hear. And it's a bear. He's woofing at us because this bear had come in and decided to claim this elk. So we weren't the only ones that found this elk. So this bear is, like, claiming this elk, like, whoa, whoa. And I don't want to yell at the bear because I don't want the elk to run off. And so I'm like, I think that now I'm assuming that the elk is down pretty good because the bear is there and he's wolfing and claiming the elk. And we've got, like, we're moving in. So I'm like, I tell my hunter, I was like, we need to do two things. We need to make, we just got to put this elk down because I don't want him running away. I don't want to lose him. And I want to yell at that bear. He's like, okay. So he draws back and shoots. And the elk's like laying, it's probably like 20 yards away from us. I don't know. It wasn't very far. It's laying like horizontal. I would say it's like laying horizontal. So like perpendicular to us. So its body, everything's good. You know, he has a shot. And by this point, the bear had moved off, but we can hear him like woofing in the alders back on this little rise. So the guy like draws back and shoots. And somehow, I don't know, I think he like, he like jerked the bow so hard. It hits one tree and like, there's all these lodge, like clear lot, like big lodgepole pines in between us. And it, this arrow like ping pongs through the trees, like slap, 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 and sticks in the rear end of the bull, almost going the opposite direction that we're even aiming at. I was like, I don't even know how this is possible. So he puts another arrow on, shoots, makes a good shot. Now we have no arrows and a bear there. So I start yelling, hey, hey bear, hey. And we run up to the elk and I grab an arrow out, one of these extra arrows. And he goes, give me the bow. And I looked at him like he was smoking crack. I was like, you give me the bow because you couldn't hit an elk that was laying here dead still five times. You're not about to hit a charging bear. So I take the arrow, I yell, I'm throwing sticks in the brush. Bear goes off, thankfully, never came in. So I'm like, dude, that was just like a wild experience of things that just went wrong. And so get the arrow, we get the second arrow. So we've got two arrows now. I'm like, all right, I didn't have a pistol either. I was like, I just didn't have anything. I mean, I had my pack, but I didn't carry a pistol then. It was a black bear, it wasn't a grizz. So so I wasn't like super worried about it, but you know, big black bear can mess you up if you've got you're getting an elk or whatever and it wants to claim it. So I was like, okay, you watch out. You get a big stick and you throw sticks, no shooting at anything. Definitely not at a charging bear while I'm around. It probably hit me. So I'm skinning. So I was like, I really wanted to get this bull. And my thing is like, I'll cut the quarters off and we're going to get all the meat. And then we're going to go hang it in a tree a little ways away. And then we're just going to leave the carcass, like the guts, the stuff that we wouldn't eat for the bear. So the bear's on that stinky stuff and he's going to enjoy it. And then we're going to go hang the meat where he's not going to mess with it. So I am skinning that bull out and not a word of a lie. I go to the front foot where I'm going to do my first cut to skin it out. And in the hoof of this bull is that first shot, not the first shot that went 5 feet in front of us, but that first shot that he missed with. He hit it in the hoof and the bull still stayed there after I bugled. That's how like rutted up this bull was. I was like, this is absolutely crazy that bull stayed around for that third shot. And so we got the bull all cut up, hung it in a tree, hiked out that night. I carried a good portion of it with me. And then the next morning went back in with a gun just in case the bear was there and packed the rest of the bull elk out. That was with, actually I had at the time, I think my dad and mom came in to help and then another friend. And it was just like this extremely exciting experience of like, hey, we finally got the bull, of course. I didn't think this guy was actually going to get one. And like the relief of that was actually my first client after owning my own outfitting business. Like that was the first client that I took under my own outfitting business. And to have this story where I was just like, man, you know, we're telling the story to everyone back at camp and the guy, like, this is just the most wild thing that's ever happened. And one story that I just always think about when I kind of think about the way things work out in life and the way that, like, it's almost like sometimes things you just can't foreshadow. They just work out in ways that you can't even imagine. So I titled this podcast, The Live Wild Podcast. And the main reason behind that, I've kind of had like I guess if anyone could have a tagline, you know, that's the thing now. You just like have a hashtag or a tag. And mine's always been live wild, hunt hard. And I mean, maybe it's like, I chose that or started using that, not because it was like a cool thing, but it was really, I thought what the way that I live my life. I think that there's so many amazing things that happen in the wild that are just truly these unique and wild experiences. That there are things that don't happen anywhere, but it's also a lot of my hunt strategy and my hunt style. I've had a lot of wild things happen to me in my life because I've spent so much time actually out in the wild. I've been struck by lightning. I actually found my wife in a survival situation, search and rescue situation after she was lost. I saved her life and now we're married. We weren't dating at the time, but you know, you save someone's life, they tend to want to marry you. So glad it wasn't a dude. But anyways, I digress. The live wild portion is just like, much of my hunting tactics are based on observing the way that animals interact, their behaviors. Because if I can hone in on that behavior, that time spent observing animals, then I can develop techniques and tactics based on understanding what they're going to do and how to maybe exploit a weakness or a strength of theirs. So I can be consistently successful no matter where I am, what the species is, or what I'm hunting with. And I think over the course of this podcast, I think the way that I'm going to help you become the best hunter possible is by really diving into my process and my tactics. Now, the hunt hard portion is also a lot of my philosophy, because a lot of my success has been from where that persistence and luck just kind of intersect. It's being out there and not necessarily, you might only have 2 days to hunt. You might only have a weekend. You might only have this or that, but giving it everything I have for that encounter of persistence and luck, where those two things can meet. And by just giving it my all, by actually training in the off season, by being physically fit, by shooting whatever I'm hunting with so I can be proficient. So when that time does come, it becomes automatic. It becomes something where it's like, hey, it becomes a lot easier because I've spent time thinking about it. I've spent time learning about it. I've spent time preparing and practicing about for it. And so that's the things that I want to talk about in this podcast and teach you those methods. So when you go out, you can understand that behavior. You can capitalize on these tips and tactics. You can see the way that I see things and be successful for yourself and put in that time and that energy and that work. And just by listening to this podcast, you're already doing it. I know that there's a lot of listeners that have reached out and been like, man, this tip or tactic helped me. And that's why I want to continue to do this podcast, is to kind of keep giving you those tips and tactics. Now, in the particular story that I like to kind of relate some of the tips and tactics to the stories. One thing, like a hot ticket item, one thing that we, when I talk about elk hunting, I think it comes across as something that people really want to listen to. So I enjoy, and it's one thing that I like talking about because I cut my teeth as an elk guide. I grew up hunting elk and then made my living up into like my entire adult living chasing elk and getting good at it. And so I think that the elk tactics are something that I've picked up, that these are things that I never read in a book because this kind of information wasn't there. A lot of the information that I got was stuff that yet helped a little bit, but it wasn't all these little nuanced things that have helped me be extremely successful week in and week out when I was guiding people or on my own hunts. And it comes from a lot of that observation of behavior and understanding, just kind of like paying attention to the surroundings, living wild, immersing myself into that experience. And one thing that might stick out of that story is that bull I found by smelling it. You're like, well, that's really weird. That's like a keyed in thing. But when you think about your olfactory senses, it's one of the first senses that develop as a human. There's so much in there. If you actually, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but let's say even on an animal, when you boil out a skull or whatever, and inside the nose cavity, that bone is this like honeycomb structure. And that honeycomb structure detects all the smells. It's one of your first senses to develop because as a baby, you can smell danger. And it's something that like you smell your mother, you smell before you know anything else, your sense of smell starts working. And it's the first sense that we just kind of throw to the wind. It's like, yeah, when we're elk hunting, we're spotting, we're hiking, we're glassing, we're moving, we're doing all the things, we're bugling, we're making sounds, and then we forget about our nose. And if you've never elk hunted before or smelt an elk, it's one of those things that it's going to stick out in your memory like nothing else. I remember the first time I smelt an elk. We were walking up this ridge with my dad, and it was like all we hadn't at this point, we weren't very good elk hunters. We just walked around until we tried. It was like more of that, like it was like we were just going to be persistent until we found luck and having no skill involved. We just walked around in the woods and we rarely saw anything until I really started to kind of pick it apart and learn how to hunt. And the first time we smelled elk, it was like, whoa, they're right here. We can smell them and we're going to be pretty close. And it turned out that we hunted a lot of timber then. And it turned out that we ended up running into those elk. What we were smelling was a wallow that had been there that where they, and we found their beds and stuff. So they'd wallowed and bedded, and then we're just bedded off a little bit further distance in the timber there. But being able to smell a bull is an extremely effective tool that, like, it might be something that you don't even think about. And over the years, I've kind of developed this way that I go through the woods or through thick timber intentionally using my nose. And the first is just the simple act of breathing through your nose. I know it, like, as you're hiking. I actually was told this story. This guy that my grandpa grew up with, was a Native American, and he told me this story. It's one thing that got, he was the guy that told me about smelling elk. And I was like, this guy's crazy, man, smelling elk. And he's like, no, he told him, his ancestors told him that, like, the way you walk through is you breathe in your surroundings. And I don't know if this is a popular teaching or if this was just the thing that he was an artist. He had a lot of colorful words, but he really liked that thought of, like, breathing in everything that's around you. And I took it in the way of, like, yeah, just paying attention to what's going on. But just the act of walking around and breathing through your nose makes a big difference. I would say the majority of the elk that I've gone on, especially during archery season, is because I've smelt them first in the timber and then been able to react to the way that they're, you know, like, having that smell, knowing that there might be something close, then making the right calls or the right moves after that. Now, as I first started, like, hunting, maybe I was like a late teenager, getting in hiking and, like, preparing myself for the hunt, I did a lot of, like, uphill hiking. And I've talked about it before of, like, how to prepare myself. And one was I'd pick this hill and I would just walk up it without stopping. Well, one thing that made me better at that was changing the way that I would breathe, from breathing in through my mouth and giving myself a lot of oxygen, which is a great way to do it. But I would control my breathing and breathe through my nose. And I did that so many times that I developed, as I'm hiking, in hard hiking and whatever, I would breathe in through my nose and out through my mouth. And then it came to being in the elk woods and realizing that as I'm breathing through my nose, I'm sensing things that I can't pick up with my eyes and I can't pick up with my ears and I can't, you know, that's around, but I can't see. And by using that one sense and picking up that smell of the elk, it completely changed the way that I was successful, because it changed the way that I reacted, because I knew that they were there and I could react on that behavior of whatever the time of year it was. If it's during the archery season, then it's like, hey, maybe I was bugling back there, they didn't reply. Now maybe I'll throw out some cow calls because I know he's within this proximity to come and want to check something out. So one thing that you might want to think about is, like, that act of breathing through your nose, but paying attention to what's around you. A key factor in this is hunting into the wind, picking your spot based on the way that the wind's going. If it's thick cover, moving into the wind and being able to detect those things because you're using the wind in your favor as opposed to them smelling you first. And that goes with, like, any form of hunting. Obviously, you want to get the wind in your favor. But there's something about just, like, any sense, your eyes. I can spot things that maybe somebody else can't, even if we have the same vision, because I've trained myself on what to look for. You can train your nose on what to smell. There's sommeliers that they grab a glass of wine, they swirl it around, they take a smell of it, and they can tell you the types of notes and the types of wines and the types of grapes and the, who knows, maybe the average rainfall, where that came from. I don't know. I can't. That's not my thing. I know nothing about it. It all smells the same to me. Now, when it comes to the smell of where an elk's been and a live bull elk, I could tell you the difference in a heartbeat. I could tell you the difference between a mule deer and a cow elk. I could tell you the difference between a moo cow. And they just smell completely different. But it's because during those experiences, I've paid attention to those scents and trained my brain to recognize the things that I'm smelling. So as I'm out there, I'm breathing in through my nose and trying to process what the smells are there. It seems very strange, and it seems like a tactic that's like, oh, that's an out there tactic, but it's a tactic that a lot of extremely successful elk hunters use, and you'll hear it a lot in conversation, but not a lot of people teach about it, because they'll say, oh, I smelt these elk. As we went up to the rise, we could smell the elk really thick, and now maybe you're smelling the wallows or where they've been, or maybe you've got to the point where, you know, if you kill an elk during archery season, you know, take in the smell of, like, what's that smell like? And my best way to describe it is, to me, the way that my brain recognizes it, when it's on an animal, it smells hot. But it doesn't matter if you're, and it's like, how does it smell hot? I don't really know. It just does. I can smell the difference between a bull and a cow. But I'm saying that you can develop those skills over time by doing it. It sounds strange, but it is an extremely effective skill to have. Now, in the meantime, just thinking about using your nose more and using the senses that you have is going to allow you to get in and be more successful when that opportunity arises. Because whether you've never smelt an elk in your life and you're walking through the elk woods and you're breathing through your nose, you're going to experience it. And it doesn't matter whether you can tell if it's where they've been or not, because it's going to completely change now your focus and the way that you're moving. If I'm moving through fast and I get that hit of smell of elk, then I'm going to slow down. I'm going to pay attention. Maybe I'm going to decide to do a call if it's during the rut. If it's during a rifle season, it's going to get me on alert. Maybe throw up my binoculars and start looking. It's going to let me know, like, hey, there's sign here. There's elk here. Now I can proceed accordingly. And just by using a simple thing of breathing through your nose while you're hiking can completely change the outcome of your hunt and the amount of success that you're going to experience. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. I appreciate all the everybody that's been subscribing lately. You know, feel free to share this with your friends. Subscribe multiple times on multiple different platforms. Just stream it all day at work. You know, whatever you really have to do. I mean, I'm good with it all. Your boss will understand because he's probably listening to it in his office right now. That's probably not a guarantee. But speaking of listening, next week is going to be all about the ears. We're going to keep on this theme of senses. We talked about the eyes. We talked about the nose. Next week, we're going to talk about sound and the way that sound travels in the mountains. It's really effective when it comes to early season elk hunting and calling into the mountains, knowing where the sounds are coming from and if the animal that you're calling to can hear you. We're going to title it, Can You Hear Me Now? So next week is going to be, Can You Hear Me Now? I also got a little bit of a report. Somebody caught something in the last episode. So I get messages about things that are caught. I had some subliminal messages. Apparently, I had some subliminal messages in the intro of the last podcast. Very, very scandalous. They said if you play the intro in reverse, I'll just play it for you. It says this.
If you listen to the Evolve podcast, you will be a great hunter. You should share the Evolve podcast to all your friends and family. Don't forget to subscribe. Subscribe to Live Wild Podcast. Give it very good ratings.
Now, I don't know why it's so weird and legible. And also, I am a grown man, and I guess I did put subliminal messages in the title. I'm sorry for that. If you didn't play it in reverse and hear it, if you listen to it multiple times, I'm sure you'll pick it up. With that being said, until next week, smell you later.